in a different way. What did I say? I can't even think
Strengthening
what
the
else.
soul.
So it's
Strength.
just strengthening our well-being and who we are. So, and I don't even know if I'm doing this right. But that's what I would say, that it's our personal power center, and by doing the exercise of the formula, we will strengthen that. And then I have nothing else to say because I think I'm just gum flapping here.
Well done. Thank you very much for starting us off. And I think honestly, it was a lovely, lovely description. And the only thing that's missing for me as your client is I don't know what the exercise actually is and consists of.
Oh yes, I will read
Yes.
out. Yeah, so
Yeah.
I'll read out the sheet first and just say
Yes.
that what we got to,
This
and
is what we it
the
is. Yeah.
formula, this is
Yeah.
what we will do. Yeah,
And
that's what
then
I'll do.
how would you explain the warmth?
The warmth is, I'll say that, well, how would I explain that? I'll just say that it's not actually, I don't know what I would say. What would I say? What do you say? What do you say,
Bev,
Jane?
what do you, how would you describe the solar plexus? Not the easiest one to describe.
No, I think plexus in the notes talks about a junction of nerves. So you talk about that and
Or
the solar,
a
a
network, I think,
network
is
of nerves.
plexus. Yeah.
Yeah. And the solar is like the gastric. So it's the area, like the seat of the autonomic nervous system. That was something that I think I read in the notes. Does that make sense to you, Jane?
I can't remember it being in the notes, that's all, so I'm not really quite sure.
Yeah.
To
What was
worry.
your question to me
Well,
about the warmth?
it was what about warm?
How
It's
would you say
just a bit,
how warmth
that
is?
PM missed out. Look, I mean, we can go very simple.
Oh, because when we are more relaxed, we tend to sense maybe a warmth arising in the solar region, in the abdominal region.
And maybe sensing it almost says, oh, no, it doesn't, does it? Yes. People did really experience a feeling of warmth. That was what they were reporting to Schultz. And of course, if we look at it in the terms of relaxation response, then it could well be associated with the sense of blood flow increasing in the relaxation response. And I'm going to turn to Anne now because now I'm getting tongue-tied.
It,
I've
it's simple. The way that I've said all the things that Pia and Bev have said and you, I use the word solar.
Yeah.
The solar, the plexus is a crossing over of nerves. Solar, we're part of the solar system, and the sun is our source of energy. So the fact that it's called solar plexus has
Yes.
something to
Yeah.
do with energy.
Yeah.
Physiologically, it's the solar plexus or the celiac plexus is a sort of Clapham junction of nerves, which actually innervate the digestive organs. So the blood supply to the digestive organs is increased in the abdomen when we say my solar plexus is, and that's actually happening with the physiological relaxation sense is because our digestion is enhanced. I mean, actually, talking about the digestion, I always talk about, starting with the saliva in the mouth. If you get saliva in the mouth, some people have it tremendously. Why do you get saliva in the mouth? It's the first process of digestion. It has the first digestive enzyme in it called ptyalin, which digests starch. So if you put a boiled sweet in your mouth, it will dissolve. If you put a peanut in your mouth, it won't dissolve because it doesn't dissolve fiber or protein. So the first digestive juice comes from your salivary glands, then going down to the stomach, which has very, very strong digestive juices. And then the digestive juices from the duodenum, and the addition from the pancreatic. So all of this is going on. And then you get the motility. So we all know that when we do the AT practice and we switch into the parasympathetic state, we can get rumbling in the tummy. It can actually make it ease our bowel action and all of that. Because when we go into the parasympathetic mode, the body needs to digest food and to take all the nutrients in to actually build up all that's been spent in the sympathetic thing. So all of digestion and assimilation and absorption is enhanced. And that would be that's the explanation. But actually the sense is a feeling of warmth because all of that activity is enhanced and the blood supply is enhanced. So that's quite a long rambling one, but I think it's quite interesting to start with the digestive tract.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say the digestive tract starts here and ends there. And it's another of our wondrous systems
Systems.
that is regulated by the autonomic nervous system and sympathetic fight and flight, as we'd heard from yesterday, the peristalsis stops, your mouth goes dry, the peristalsis, because you need all your energy is needed for fight and flight. And when we enter the rest and renewal and repair mode, they're exactly the opposite. You need to digest, to absorb, digest, and so on and so forth. So I usually give that
Thank you.
explanation.
Oh, thank you so much.
And
I've
then
never, I.
tell people how to find it. And I get them to sit with their hand in the front and their hand in the
And in the
back
back.
and to
Yes.
think of a line between and somewhere
Yes.
in the middle.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's a good way. And Luther used to say, when you are thinking about it, you can approach it from the back. Although this is called the abdominal warmth exercise, very often people do get a sense of the warmth in the back rather than in the front. So it's up to people how they approach it when they're actually going to practice it. But you've all said some lovely things, and thank you, Pia, because there is the other side about the center and the core
Yes.
and all of that. And you do, by all means, mention chakras. It's just that Schultz wouldn't have done that all, being a medical man, I think, although he was very aware of Eastern meditations. Yeah. So we're really going to the center, aren't we? And sometimes I say, what do we feel when we're what do we mean when we say that somebody is self-centered?
They're narcissistic.
Yeah. On the other hand, we could reframe it completely and say that with this, we are really taking care of the center of ourselves. And self-centered, actually, the center of the self is a really key place to be. And you mentioned, Pia, the gut feel as well, that am I going to remember this right? There are elements of brain tissue in the gut. So we know we have the hunch, we have the, oh, I'm not sure about this, or we have the heart or my head. Well, actually, it's probably the gut or my head. And we know that sometimes decisions are made without cognition,
You
but they're
say
made
my gut feeling,
my gut
my
feeling,
gut
exactly,
feeling. You
as Pia was saying.
say you make me feel sick.
Okay. Oh, yes, which is a very angry statement, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a seat of strong emotions. Yes.
But am I right, Anne, that it's not really the stomach, it's the center that gets affected. So like if we are nervous, we say, oh, I got butterflies in my tummy, but it's not really in the tummy, the sac. It's the nerve center, is
No,
it?
no, no, no. Well, the nerve center regulates the organs, the
Yeah.
stomach, the duodenum, the pancreas, the liver, the spleen, small intestine, the large intestine. So that solar plexus, which is situated behind, in front of the spine, actually, it's the outflow from the from the nerves, which causes the changes in all the things. It's not actually happens in the nerve causes, or the nerve stimulates all these changes that occur. In actual fact, the nerve mostly increases the blood supply to these organs through the celiac. It's called the celiac plexus. It's also called the celiac artery. And the celiac artery is the main artery coming up the aorta, which supplies the digestive organs. So
Yes.
it's the effect of the blood supply that's causing the changes in function of the stomach, the duodenum, pancreas, and so on and so forth. So it's a anabolic building up, an anabolic process. This is what happens when you go into the parasympathetic. It's an anabolic. The sympathetic is a catabolic, breaking down. Anabolic is building up.
Thank you so much.
You.
And what you will find yourselves doing is working out how much a client, I'm going to say, needs to know. Because in the end, we could put it down to its most simplistic is that when, as you were saying, Pia, rightly, starting out with the limbs and then going more and more into oneself. And then, so what is happening in there? And people simply told Schultz that they had a sense of warmth there, and that's maybe all they need to know. And then, so here is our phrase: my solar plexus is warm. Doesn't matter if you feel warm or not, or if you feel warm in the back or whatever. You could put a hand here, as Anne suggests. It's wonderful in the upper abdominal region. And the other thing that I sometimes link up with is the fact that we've been doing the breathing exercise. That was last week's new one. We've been doing the breathing exercise, and of course the lungs are actually going to be pushing down and then releasing up again the diaphragm at the very top of the abdominal cavity. So we're kind of linking things up a little bit here. We're already associating by doing the breathing and observing it, some abdominal activity almost by default. So, but you don't have to say all these things. I think sometimes less is more. And we can just
I
say
think you just decide what we're working with
what
your client, what
comes.
they would like to
Exactly.
know. Do they, are they
Exactly.
quite happy just to say my solar
Yeah.
plexus is
It's
warm and
warm.
find it,
Yeah.
or do they like
Yeah.
explanations, or
Yeah.
would they be interested? So
Yes. They will ask questions,
yeah,
actually.
yeah,
Yes.
yeah.
Yes.
No, you don't need to
Yes.
impart all that, but if
No.
anybody asks, it's as well to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's May
that.
I ask, when I learned it when I was 12, if I translate it, it was my solar plexus is warm and glowing, but that's not correct to say
Well,
glowing, is it?
no, and the standard, well tried and tested phrases do not
Just
put
warm.
something else in. I've read this a lot, actually, that glowing
Yeah.
or sunny, no, sunny, I haven't had, no, what was it? Some can't remember all the lights, but no, because we're putting something in there as a suggested result,
So it's
but.
not too glowing because
So
that's what
we,
I
so
learned.
I wouldn't put the glowing in. Don't put anything in that we haven't got on the sheets.
Excellent.
It's almost making a demand, which might not be right. Whereas warm is or isn't a fact. It's either percepted or it's not. Sorry, it's either perceived, sorry, or not perceived. But glowing implies I must make something happen. That's my interpretation of it, anyway.
No, I was just curious. That's good. Thank you.
That's interesting. Well, I'm interested that you had that, you were given that phrase at the age of 12. I think that's quite young to have that
And you know,
concept.
I actually remember it like it was yesterday that I said, oh, it feels like a sun. I didn't know what solar plexus meant. And I
Right.
said, oh, it's like I have a sun in my tummy.
Sun.
I
Wow.
remember I said that because it was this glowing feeling of a shining sun. And
Yeah.
I didn't know. But I
Oh,
remember it, yeah.
you must have had an inner wisdom beyond your years.
Know. Yeah. But that
So
was the
that's
feeling.
the warmth they say. So how would you deal? What could be contraindications for this formula, would you think?
Well, it's definitely we're not to do it for children under 10, it was saying in the sheets.
Yeah.
And why is that? Can I ask, why is that?
I just because of concept. I think, you know, children are, they probably haven't got much idea of the construct of the body, and these words are a wee bit strange. I mean, there's no reason I would have thought that a 10-year-old couldn't just say my tummy is warm. I'd have thought something that was appropriate for their age would be fine if that felt like a good idea. So, but these actual words, I think, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would there be a time when you would say, no, don't use this formula?
During the last 3 months of the pregnancy?
Oh, yes, we come up to that old nutmeg, if it is.
But I don't know if that was just what I read in the notes.
No, you're quite right. No, you're absolutely right. That was the received wisdom for a long time.
Right.
And we might turn to Anne again on the middle. Sorry?
Is that like it is now? Is that
I think I've talked to a number of pregnant women, and they have found that they really enjoy autogenics so much, and they probably learned that the solar plexus exercise maybe, what am I saying, perhaps earlier in pregnancy, and they don't want to stop using it when they reach that end of pregnancy. And there used to be a theory that it could provoke a bleed or something. But I would suggest that as long as the pregnancy is normal and the person is comfortable and they actually want to use it because they are used to it anyway and that's them, I would say, yes, go ahead. The only time I might put a cautionary thing is to check if there's something like placenta previa, which could induce a hemorrhage at some point. Then, of course, we don't want to make that worse by having this increased blood flow. But I think, honestly, I have never, ever heard of anybody having a problem with it. What about you, Anne?
Well, this is a very convoluted and controversial thing. First of all, I mean, just to put a spanner in the works.
Yes.
The last 3 months of pregnancy, the baby is well and truly formed. It has to grow.
Yes.
The first trimester and the second trimester, where if there was any possibility that the blood flow, and particularly the first one, when someone probably doesn't know they're pregnant. So this is some sort of theoretical thing, which in my mind doesn't actually happen.
Yeah.
And also, I absolutely agree with Jane. I have taught many pregnant women because the actual benefits of whatever they needed to do, the pregnancy with all the past history and anxieties and fears about this one, the actual possibility of that was absolutely minuscule, and the possibilities of them actually having a better outcome was far, far worse. So and the other thing, because this is such a topic and nobody really knows, and so at one point, I think way back, I thought I wouldn't teach the solar plexus. But actually having a group of people, I thought actually if we just got one person, but having a group didn't work at all. So I gave that up.
Yes, and I quite agree with that. And I was doing the same thing. And actually everybody got it and the person themselves got it. And they were asked not to use it. But that became their choice then, because if they were curious and wanted to, then they did. And there seemed to be no hardship, no difficulty. Again, we're following the client, aren't we? So give them the stuff, and
can I just just on this the same kind of thing, when I had lots of surgery in that area, I'd learnt autogenics, and I learnt it obviously from Anne, so I learnt it this way and I was doing it and everything was fine. All of a sudden I started skipping my solar plexus. I just skipped it. I went straight from breathing, forehead. And I used to come out of it and think, I don't know why I'm doing that. It wasn't a conscious thing. It was just, I missed a bit. Well, I don't know. And then I'd do it again. I missed it again. This went on for about a year and a half. And in the end, I thought, oh, there's obviously something. My body doesn't, because there's lots going on around that area. So I thought, I wasn't worrying about it. Just leave it out. I just do what I'm doing. I can't put it in because I'm not thinking
about it.
It's just and then all of a sudden, it just came back in again.
Yeah.
And I came out the bioenergetics one day and I thought, I did my solar plexus. It just, and again, I hadn't thought, oh, I'll try it, see if it'll, I just carried on and it just dropped it back in again. So I like that as an example, but that your brain will protect you as well.
Yes.
If it need, I don't know what was happening, if it would have made a difference, if I'd have forced myself to say it or what have you, but it didn't want it, so it didn't get it. Until it did.
Until it did. And I love this. I mean, this is the stuff of AT, isn't it? The client knows best. The body knows best. Your body knew best. And all our faffing about whether we should or whether we shouldn't, or is the third trimester or whatever it is, actually is blown apart because we just left it to you. And I think that's very powerful.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very good.
And the other thing to say, of course, is that it isn't that we get particular effects, shall we call it, from a particular formula. I mean, we are discussing this now as though we do. But just as you can have warmth when we're doing the heaviness exercise, we might be extremely aware of our breathing while we're doing the heartbeat exercise. And it could be that simply using my right arm is heavy, which is the trigger, and we're just going straight into the autogenic state. The body will start working with that on what it needs to do. Yeah, yeah. And so whether or not we get as far as the solar plexus actually doesn't matter at all.
I agree. Yeah.
So I think that's important to impart to our clients that, you know, it's not this is going to have that effect. It's sort of the way that we teach it, but it doesn't actually happen that way.
Yeah, I think with me it was I didn't want to focus on anything around there.
No, thank you very much. We'll skate over it. We will. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Completely right. Yes. Yes, especially knowing it was your area of difficulty.
Mm.
So your brain did all that for you. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Sorry, Bev, you were going to ask.
No, it's I just was having a look at the theory notes just when you were asking about adverse reactions. Oh, I wonder what they are. Let's find it. And then there's an important note there, and it says the autogenic exercises facilitate a self-healing process which leads towards resolution of functional and organic disorders. Would you ever use that kind of language with a client?
I don't think I would, because it's actually a wee bit promisey.
Yeah.
I wonder where it came from. It sounds like it's a quote from...
No, it's actually the theory notes. You know.
Yes, I realise that, but I wonder where we got it from to put it in there.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't use that sort of language, but of course it's tied up in the language we are already using, that we've got the inherent self-righting mechanisms.
Yeah.
So, yes, what would you say, Anne, about that?
I would say that this actually helps your digestion to work better.
Mm.
You know, therefore, all the things, you know, digestion, absorption, integration, mm. and evacuation, all helped. Mm. Peristalsis is, you know, this actually is an aid to digestion. Mm. And with people with irritable bowel and things like that, a great boon and so
Absolutely.
On and so forth. So it makes something work better.
Yes. Work better. That's brilliant. Yes. Mm. Make something work. That's the whole emphasis of this, isn't it? Making everything work better. Brilliant. Okay. Thank you for looking that up, Bev.
Oh,
have you sneeze.
No, I just came across it. I thought I'm going to
sneeze
one out.
So the last bit is, okay, how would you deal with adverse reactions? There's that word again. But anything uncomfortable, we talked about this. We can answer this in 5 seconds, can't we? You know the answer. It's an R word.
Reduce, omit, phone.
Got it. Okay. And omit and postpone might at first be the same thing, that we simply don't use it. It's likely to be some sort of discomfort. And if somebody, if it just isn't agreeing with somebody, then they don't have to use it. And then it'll pass.
I've found with working with people with IBS, they don't like the, I don't want warm there. Right. So that's when we go in through the back rather yes. than,
uh-huh.
that sorts that out straight
okay. away. That's interesting. I don't think, I can't think of anybody. I've taught lots of people with IBS, but they've done their anger offloading and they've already reduced the symptoms quite a lot with heavier warm and anger offloading before we ever get to this point.
Mm.
And the IBS is vastly improved.
I had three people in a row.
Right.
Yeah, like, oh, I don't think I want to do that.
Oh, fascinating.
So I think you then have a discussion, or you ask questions as to what's behind that, and you usually mm-hmm. get some very interesting
mm-hmm.
information as to why they don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can reassure them that actually the whole thing about this and about the going into the parasympathetic is that your digestion will work better. It can smooth out peristalsis. So you can have a good pitch for there and ask them, shall we try it? You know, try it, we can stop
yeah,
it.
They, yeah.
I think it's never, well, not never, never say never. It's not a good thing if someone says, I don't think I like that, not to do it. Because in actual fact, in sorting it out, discussing it, and then introducing it, and then if you have a bad experience, fair enough. But if you don't do it, it's something about an opportunity is missed for moving on from any sort of entrenched position.
Absolutely. All of them did it, but I had the same initial reaction of, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want anything warm there. So, yeah, we did. Yeah. I talked to all three of them because it was funny that it happened one client after the next, after the next. So I was getting quite practiced at this.
Yes.
My sales pitch by the end of it. They all did it. And the only thing that I needed, what all three of them got hold of, was going, imagining it from the back, not from the front.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely fine. All three of them absolutely fine with it.
Lovely. I mean, that is the way that it mostly goes, isn't it? Of course, you would always try it with them. That's the whole point. And that was the disappointment that Donna and I were finding with the previous training, because they weren't always doing exercises with the client during the session. So the clients were going away practicing it on their own without the support of the therapist taking them through. It was a bit odd, that. So we brought this back to our normal practices. Where are we now? Introducing the verbalization of anxiety exercise.
I think probably I'll say goodbye now because I've got to see her. So
yes.
I'll say goodbye and let you get on with things. And see you again.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's been absolutely lovely, as ever.
Bye.
Oh, will you?
You all right?
Yes, no, it's all right. It's something that's happening later and they can wait. So we must get on with our work. That's fine. So, who wants to do the anxiety exercise?
Can I go for that one?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we've done a recap of the practice that you've been doing over the last week. We've introduced this week's new exercise, which includes the formula of my solar plexus is warm. What I'd like to leave us with today is a new intentional offloading exercise. And this should be quite comfortable, or this idea of working with the intentional offloading should be quite comfortable now, because we're coming towards the end of them. And I know during our discussions, you've told me how beneficial you found them, particularly the venting of anger and how helpful that's been to you. This one is called the intentional verbalization of anxiety. And its purpose is to give the brain an opportunity to offload feelings of anxiety and fear. The kind of anxiety we have when we might be feeling slightly phobic, or we have a job interview, or we're running our first AT session with a client, and our nerves are really extreme. Rather than kind of holding all of that anxiety in the bodily system, we can use this exercise as a way of verbalizing our fears and going through it to the point that we almost exhaust what we have to say, and the energy is exhausted, and we'll come out the other end to a place of silence, and we'll feel it in our body that we've done enough of the technical offloading, because there will be relief. Until we may feel the need to do it again. So one of the things that we've done with anger is we've done a control inventory. And I'm also going to give you one of those for anxiety. And I want you to have a look at the kinds of things that may be making you feel anxious during the week. And you might find that just by doing this exercise alone, it helps you to kind of reevaluate your life and things that are making you anxious and maybe make changes there. And so, yes, are there any questions that you have before we go and do a practice of it?
You won't be doing a practice of this with your clients.
Okay, so I won't go with them and go, I'm so frightened, I'm so anxious, I'm so anxious, I'm so anxious, and kind of give right. them a demonstration of
yes, you can give a demonstration.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for that demonstration.
Yeah.
I'm going to say there. Actually, do you say, let me ask you a question, or maybe Pierre would like to pick it up or whatever. What about, because there's two sorts of anxiety, isn't there? There's the specific and there's the non-specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there could be just a pervasive sense of anxiety that we don't know what it's about. We could just be feeling dread. And then there could be, I'm so scared about this job interview tomorrow. I'm so frightened. They're going to ask me a question. I'm not going to know what to say. It makes me feel so scared. I hate it. I'm really angry. And then I'm crying. And then whatever else is happening. You know? But that's the way for me offloading goes. It's not just purely one thing. I think the emotions just all go in and out.
And I'm quite keen on... I hope it's on the sheets, this, but I might have developed mine and then not let the training ones catch up. But actually, anxiety is very often somebody's given a diagnosis of having GAD, which is a general anxiety disorder. And that isn't about job interviews or anything else. It's nothing specific. This is the non-specific anxiety. And that is when the mind-body system is in a general state of anxiety pretty much all the time. It might be preventing them going to sleep. It might be just that all the time they've got that butterflies in the tummy or whatever it is, and that's what they live with. And that's not very pleasant. However, I always say for the person who suffers non-specific anxiety, if you are already doing this course, then you've been doing your autogenic training, hopefully you've done some anger offloading. Hopefully you've also done some crying exercises. And with those three things, you are already addressing your non-specific anxiety. So as you're quite right, Bev, we don't know what that's about. We haven't got that specificism. And actually, the offloading anxiety exercise, sorry, let me say the intentional anxiety exercise, really only addresses specific anxiety. That's what I say to people. I don't know if that's actually physically correct, but I can't see that the offloading exercise where we actually use words, I am afraid of the job interview, or I am afraid of Tuesday, I am afraid of. And yes, you have said, oh, I'm so scared, I'm so scared. Yes, you're still expressing the anxiety, you are. But I think we've got to be careful to encourage our clients to say, I'm afraid of the job interview, I'm afraid of the 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 interview, and you roll it off your tongue as fast as you can. And if we just say, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, my sense about that is that we're stopping it all the time. We're just making a statement of how scared we are. Are we actually offloading the scaredness of the topic, the fear of the topic? So we just should name it.
Yeah, it's not the topic though, is it? I think when I think about that, if I'm afraid of something, and whenever I've done this exercise, which hasn't been a great deal, I can be non-specific and still get a benefit out of it. So I can just name the fact that I'm fearful without to include what it is I'm fearful. And maybe because I know what I'm fearful of, and I'm just saying, I'm so afraid, I'm so afraid, I'm so afraid. And then it might come out what I'm afraid of. But I think for me personally, we're all different, and I'd want the client, you know, to be kept safe. I like the freedom of being able to say whatever comes out spontaneously.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes, I'm not saying don't do something. But I also think, I don't know, Donna, we must hear from you, but I'm just saying that if it's a state of being, and a lot of people are in a state of being in an anxiety mode, and that's what the AT and the crying and the anger can address, then it actually leaves the rest of it. But you're saying, just by saying, I'm afraid, no, you're not saying, you say, I'm so scared or so scared, that can actually help something which is amorphous, something we can't identify.
No, what I'm saying is, if I feel afraid of a job interview, I don't necessarily in the exercise have to go, I'm so afraid of the job interview. What I might do is say, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, because what I'm in touch with is fear, you know, and it becomes quite clunky in the mouth to have to keep saying what it is I'm afraid of. And it's a little bit maybe like bringing the fear, you know, we talked about the formula, bringing that thing I'm afraid of right into the thing until it's been sufficiently offloaded. And I think you said also something interesting about why this is included towards the end of the course, rather than, you know, if someone's anxious, this isn't the first one that you give them.
Never. No, the Schultz always said, never tackle anything head on. So very often, I mean, it has been known that people have taught the anxiety offloading exercise in week two because someone has come to autogenic training because they suffer from anxiety. And that's actually the wrong thing to do. They need to get into their AT first and foremost. And then the other offloadings, the crying and the anger, may all manifest in anxiety. So if we understand that anger offloading and the crying exercise come next, then people will perhaps do it, and they hopefully are finding it's reducing. But there is, Donna, I said a minute ago, would you join in? But can I just finish this bit? Because I think if you don't name the thing it is that you are anxious about, then actually you're not going to allow the exploring, that the naming it and the words that are coming out actually can lead on to an extension of it. For example, let's leave the job interview out. We can come back to that. An example I very often give is the fear of flying. So somebody's got to go on the business trip, or their family wants a holiday. They can't afford it. They can't avoid it. So they're going to get, but they will never, ever do their offloading anxiety exercise sitting on the plane. No, of course not. They do it in the safety and the comfort of their own home or wherever it might be. And they're going to speak it out, and they speak out the actual event. I'm afraid of the holiday, I'm afraid of the holiday, I'm afraid of the holiday, I'm afraid of the holiday. Then they might speak a bit more. I'm afraid of the plane, I'm afraid of the plane, I'm afraid of the plane, I'm afraid of the plane. Now, without saying that, and it's just, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, they might not lead themselves on to, what is it actually about the plane that I am afraid of? I know, shut in. I'm claustrophobic. Horrible. I hate. I'm afraid I can't get out. 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 And roll over these words. And then you may or may not, on one exercise, find that you've done it, that you do feel better. If you do, that's absolutely fantastic. But lots of people do say, I don't really get on with that anxiety. Well, I went on for 15, 20 minutes and it wasn't shifting anything. I don't know. So I always ask them, what were the actual words you were saying? And sometimes it is just a statement. I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid, I'm afraid. And I don't think that that shifts anything. So that's where I come from it. Having said that, I don't really suffer anxiety myself. I can get, of course, the specific anxiety, but I very quickly find that it turns into anger when I do an anxiety exercise. But I must come back to Donna, because I said ages ago, what would you say?
I'm going to agree with both of you, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I do teach it last because I think a lot of non-specific anxiety can be not cured, but dissolved by doing the anger and the crying, definitely. So I definitely do that. But then I am going to agree with Bev on
Right.
the anxiety. I have done the anxiety offloading for specific things. But like Bev, I find it. I'm afraid to go to the dentist. I'm afraid to go to it's a mouth
Oh, yes.
or something. So I have done that. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And it does lead on. The
Yes.
words will change.
Yes.
He's going to hurt me. He's going to hurt me. He's going to hurt. And oh, okay. I'm frightened of the pain. So I will
Yes.
get there.
Yes. I'm afraid of the pain. I'm afraid of the pain. I'm afraid. Yes.
Yeah. And it's. But I won't always. Maybe say everything out loud because it does feel clunky. I think you said, Bev, and I agree with that. Sometimes the sentences are too loud, too long,
Yes.
and you miss the feeling because sometimes the feeling can come up, and then I think, oh, this is an energy, and then I'm going to get rid of it, and I have to say it quite quickly. I don't know why I always feel like I need to get it out quickly.
I think we do well. I think that's part of the part of the method is to do it quickly so that it's mindless. And that's why I always encourage people to find a series of words which are not clunky. Because yes, I'm afraid of going to the dentist. Yes, I mean that's really difficult to get out. But actually, if your appointment is on Tuesday, to say I'm afraid of Tuesday, I'm afraid of Tuesday, I'm afraid of Tuesday, you will know what that is about. Or I'm afraid of my pain, I'm afraid of, as you said, it moved on to I'm afraid of the pain, I'm afraid of the pain, I'm afraid of the pain, I'm afraid of the pain. And you can do it. It's almost like while you're washing up or while you're, I don't know, cleaning the windows or ironing or something that is almost like you don't care what you're actually doing. It's just offloading the anxiety. That's the idea.
And often I think sometimes, well, yeah, not that I do it often, but I think that when I've done it, it's amazing how the hate statement comes in. I hate the thing I'm anxious of. I hate it. So it would be like, I hate the dentist. I hate the dentist. I hate the dentist. Stupid dentist. Why do I have to go to the dentist? I hate the ADA. And it's like, I don't know, there's an energy in it that's almost the same as like the faster beating heart of anxiety, you know, kind of in that nervousness. It's like the voice and everything matches that anxious energy. I think it's a wonderful exercise. You know, all of them have immense potential and power to really release things that are trapped inside us.
So it changed from an anxiety exercise to something else. Hating.
Yeah, all my offloading exercises do whenever I do them. They don't just stay as one offloading exercise.
No. So what did it change to?
It could be anger, it
Oh,
could
it
be
is.
crying, it could
Yes, absolutely. What you've just demonstrated is that it is anger. That one, that example was that it switched from anxiety to anger. I think this is a wonderful switch because it is showing again just what we were saying. that anxiety can be masking those other emotions underneath. And what you've done by starting off with the anxiety one, it has moved into the anger one. Great. Move with it and go with it. Absolutely. And I think it's well worth explaining that to your clients.
Yeah, definitely.
Because one can move to another. And of course, or you start to cry, and then that's the same thing. And of course, we can cry with anger as well. So actually, no emotion stays in its box. Neither should it.
So can I clarify something, Jane? You know, with these offloading exercises, do we do a demonstration? Do we
yes.
ever get the client to do it with us? So when I go tomorrow to do the loosening exercise, do I invite the client to do that with me, or do I just do a demonstration?
I think with the loosening up and with the noise, that those you would demonstrate and say, oh, look, let's join in. Join in, and that's fine. When we're on heavy duty emotions, never do it with the client. We're going to dump, even though you're only demonstrating and perhaps it's only pretend.
Yeah.
But if they are joining in, and either of you could get quite caught up in some real anger once you start, and that should never be mixed up with somebody else, then we are, I'm going to use the word dumping, you know, but we're putting them all together. That was a real, real tough given by Luther. And that's where a lot of these other sorts of self-expression exercises were developing in the 1970s, and they used to have anger workshops, and they did have 20 people in a room all shouting the odds, and it was extremely unpleasant. It could get extremely unpleasant, and some people didn't know when to stop or whatever. And so I think that fad has now long since passed, but Luther picked up on it and said, no, this must always be done when you're private. Then no one else is involved, no one else is hurt, there's no risk, and you have real freedom to move from one topic to another and to make that happen.
So not even a demonstration then? So
yes, a demonstration. You can demonstrate. And you would do it for about 20 seconds.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so you're not really getting into it, but this is how to do it. And then you could stop after 20 seconds. And actually, I know I started off about my neighbour, but as I've gone on, I've realised it's actually about somebody else. I'm putting them in the chair now. Oh, and another thing, and you can be quite humorous as you do it with a demonstration. But and also, if you ask your client to do it with you, they will be quite unnerved. I think that would be a big ask. So they must do it on their own. Yeah. Donna, sorry, I'm hogging things. Is that, have you?
No, I demonstrate it. I would never. I get them to do the shaking and the, you know,
yes.
And all, let's have a go. And some do, some don't.
Yes.
That's fine. It's optional.
Yeah.
When you do the noise one, there might be one, but the rest of them go.
I had our room at the hospital full of noisy exercises. It was absolutely brilliant. There were 9 people there.
Excellent.
And they were all doing the noise ones. So we were quite quietly, but it was there. Yes.
Yes. I had to rope my lot in on Friday, because having taught it, they were all going, oh, about this screaming. Like, where has this screaming come from? She said, I can't scream. I haven't asked you to scream. You can babble. And so we went into baby babble. Just babble.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, they were much more. But yeah, isn't it funny how they go from asking you to make a noise to they're screaming off a cliff somewhere.
Absolutely. And coming back the next week, I didn't get on with that shouting.
Yes.
I didn't say shout.
Shouting.
Yes.
Yes. Funny. But no, I do all the same things.
So I'm really glad that's been clarified. I mean, I don't know what it was when you were being taught AT, Bev. I mean, you must have been taught these.
Yeah, I was. And I don't want you to get the impression that I've been practicing doing this with clients, or, you know, approach. Not at all.
Yeah.
Remember, this is like I'm still in heaviness and just focusing on the intentional offloading exercise, the loosening up one.
Yes. Yes,
I think you said it as well, Pia. You know, I've not extensively read on this topic, you know, and yet here we are learning about it, but I still feel like a novice. So it's great that you can clarify all of this stuff and that we can ask you questions. Because, yeah, I want to, you know, get it right and support the client.
Of course.
Yeah, and do good demos and get them all babbling like babies, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they don't babble, you know, leave it be. Don't put the pressure on. But that's the only one that they would join in with you. And and of course, the freedom for doing it on your own means you haven't got anybody else saying, "Oh, well, don't worry about that." You don't want anybody saying that. You don't want anybody else's input. It's your own following the threads.
Yeah.
That does the work. Yes.
How ridiculous they sound, it doesn't matter. I've had some, you know, ridiculous things come up, but they're there for a reason and it will lead on, just go with it.
Mm.
Yeah. Don't censor it or don't stop it.
No censoring. Yes, thank you. That's a good word. No censoring. Look, where are we? We're at 10 to 4.
Yep.
Oh, we didn't actually say give the rationale. Shall I quickly say the rationale for the introduction of the intentional verbalization anxiety? Of course, you'd need to put the context that we've got other intentional exercises, and you rightly explained, Bev, that to leave this one till after all the others. And then why do we leave it until the end? Because crying and anger might well be the emotions underneath anxiety. So we will learn how to manage those or address those. Then the anxiety one comes. Yeah. I don't know what you're feeling about the blood pressure question. I've got two short answers. Would you like me to give them? Shall we do that? Shall we do it that way?
Yeah.
For the sake of time. And I know we've probably talked about this before, but if someone has a normal or an abnormal blood pressure, you would need to know which it is, maybe. Is it high or is it low? And they are probably being monitored by their GP, or they might be self-monitoring at home. And all you've got to be aware of is if they are taking medication, that the medication might need to be altered if there's a good result from the autogenic training. And I'm speaking there about high blood pressure. People don't medicate for low blood pressure. So that would be the case. It's just the initial consultation, the initial assessment that would be raised, I think. How would you proceed with a client suffering from hypertension? I think similar. If they're self-monitoring, that's useful. I would suggest that they don't become obsessive about it. Some people say, oh, I wonder what it did for my blood pressure. And they take the blood pressure before their exercise, and then they do the exercise, and then they take it again afterwards, and they hope for a good result. And actually, that's not very helpful. What about doing their measurements on Mondays and Thursdays and just seeing generally how it goes? Don't get obsessive.
Sounds like it's completely the opposite of passive concentration.
Yes, that's right. Yes, because you're quite right, Bev. They will be in there. So I wonder what's going on with my blood pressure. I'm going to take it in a minute. Yeah, come on. Right. So that's blood pressure, because, you know, we're not doctors, but we need the awareness so we can pass that awareness on to the client. Then there's a whole long list of other things. Now, we've talked about pregnant women. Before, during and after delivery. Okay. They can do AT before, during and after delivery. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. I think they're going to find their own way with it anyway, as we have been talking about. Diabetes, we've talked about before, haven't we? Just make sure that their monitoring is regular, and it's so easy these days. So, and again, if it's insulin controlled, that might need adjusting, but it's going to be adjusted anyway. People are monitoring all the time. A client with asthma, you're just going to teach them AT.
I think we talked about that the other day as well, didn't we? If it was really bad and they didn't like it, we just sort of do it once or
I think with the breathing formula, that was it, wasn't it? Yes. But I've never, honestly, I've just heard that people have stopped using their or forgotten to use their inhalers after about week three. It's so that it really is impressive. This was one of the earliest conditions that was researched by Schultz. And Luther witnessed it as well. Did I tell that story? Luther was a junior doctor. And the consultant brought Schultz in to teach all these people suffering from asthma, autogenic training, and Luther was very skeptical. And then he saw the results. Absolutely astonished. He was astonished. So that was his introduction to his own journey with autogenics. Eczema, similarly, actually, but with any of these things, asthma, eczema, and maybe any stress-related situation, symptoms can get worse before they get better. Or they could have a flare-up, and that's what we would call a discharge, but I don't use the word discharge very much, just part of the process. Yes, Bev?
I've heard this said often that symptoms can get better before they get worse, and I'm always curious why is that? And I'm just voicing that curiosity. So, is there an explanation you'd give, as to why if someone a client's symptoms have flared up, what you might say in response to that it can happen?
Yes, and in fact, I say it at assessment. That's why we're asking these questions. So, and I say that yes, it can get actually, it's worse before they get better. It is the flare up. And of course, many complementary therapies do this as well. Complementary therapies. So, it's when we're working in a more natural basis rather than having some medication to reduce and eliminate a symptom. These complementary therapies, or shall we say alternative therapies, actually work the other way. They're actually inducing something in the body which prompts its own healing, which is what we're doing. And so the symptom's going to come out.
But if the
Going
symptoms
to.
are a result of stress and we're doing something to reduce stress, why would the symptoms flare up? I think that's what my mind's struggling to understand.
Yes, Pia.
I see it as a detox.
It's a detox, yes, that's a good way.
Yeah,
Yes.
because I've done that if I've given up caffeine, I feel rubbish.
There you
Got
are.
it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's mind-body systems having their own memory and knowing what they need to do to clear something out.
Yeah, it feels like whenever I've done something in my body that I think is going to be good, I've had to suffer first.
Yes. Well, it's very interesting. Yes, if it hurts, it's doing you good. Yes, oh dear. And of
Yeah, well,
course.
I learned it in the psychosomatic therapy that when something is locked in the cellular membrane, when it is released, it's so concentrated that it does poison us in a way. And that is why we get worse in the
Yes,
beginning.
yes.
And then it just evens out because it's
Yes.
not helping so much. That was
Yes.
I learned, but
No,
so
that's a
dealt with.
wonderful explanation. I mean, in our autogenic world, it's more about perhaps we don't know exactly what happens scientifically, but you have got something to explain it, which is great. But the memory is doing the work that it needs to do, and as long as we have warned people about that, then it doesn't bother them at all. In fact, they take an interest in it, which is also very healthy because they are accepting it and understanding it and allowing it to happen.
And it's often 3 days or 7 days.
Oh, right.
Yeah, very often.
So what are you saying there? That when it happens, it's going to last for 3 days?
It's often either it goes for 3 days, and if it's really locked in, it goes for
For
seven.
7 days. How fascinating. I mean, I wonder what we have. I would say that the autogenic ones are more often 3 days than seven. I'm thinking of things like eczema. and asthma is short-lived. Very often people say, I had the worst asthma attack I've had for a very long time, but I was out of it the next day. And usually, or shall we say, no, migraines are probably a better one. I had the worst migraine I've had for ages. I was really, it was absolutely awful. And those 2 days, I just had to go to bed. I couldn't, and usually I can soldier on, but I had to go to bed. Third day, gone. And it's never happened like that before. So that's when we get the clues that something's going on autogenically. Have you noticed that, Donna?
Yes. I haven't taught as many people as you have, but
no.
it doesn't seem to last 7 days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have definitely noticed flare ups. And then they settle down.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering, Pia, have you got any, is all of this in one of those books you recommended, or is there, because that's quite fascinating actually, to learn a bit more about. Is it one of those books, or is there another book specifically on that topic?
Well, there's probably one I learned in, they could be in the books. It
well,
won't
look,
be.
I'm not going to stress you now. I just, if you, you come across one.
Don't worry about it now. It's the middle of the night.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll think about it.
It would just be quite interesting, because I've always wondered that, like Bev, actually.
Yes.
I've always said they, and I know by experience that they can get worse before they can get better, but I never knew why.
Yes.
So it'd be, I'd
and,
just quite like to learn a bit more about that as well. Why?
And a symptom from an old, I had it, an old historical illness, arrived one day. Well, and I was fine. It was nothing to do with anything getting worse. It actually popped up and arrived. I thought, my God, this feels like when I was a child. And I think I probably told the story anyway. And it passed after about 20 minutes, gone. And I never had that again. And I was fascinated by that. You know, it was 30 years since I'd had childhood bronchitis. And then, maybe I haven't told you. And I'd gone to bed one night, and then I felt a telltale ache, very, very specific, a little patch in the back of my spine. And I identified it straight away from when I was a child and got regular bronchitis. I mean, the heating in those days and everything else, you know. So I was just one of those chesty children. And I was permanent, missed a lot of school and all the rest of it, and going in and out of a cold, then bronchitis, then another cold, then bronchitis. Then I'd get better for a few weeks, and then it all started again. I was really quite ill up until I was nine. And then fast forward 25 years, and I got that feeling, and I thought that was the feeling I would go to my mummy and say, "Mummy, I've got my backache again." It's, oh no, you're going down with it again. And then a raging temperature and terrible breathing problems, and then, and it happened in the middle of the night in my adult life, and I could feel my breathing just packing up. I mean, you know, laboring, let's say. Wasn't ill, and I didn't have a fever. There was nothing. I knew there was nothing wrong with me at all. So I was fascinated by this. And in the end, I had to sit up in bed because the breathing really was getting quite constricted. And I put a pillow over the top, put my knees up, pillow on top, stretched the thoracic cavity, which I knew from nursing, and helped the breathing. And my husband woke up at one point and turned over and he said, "Well, hey, are you all right? Are you okay?" And I said, "Oh, yes, it's just, oh, it's just 80, and I was wheezing. It was quite extraordinary. And I said, "Don't worry about it. I'm absolutely fine." And he said, "Oh, good," and turned over and went back to sleep. And I thought, "You bastard." And and after a few minutes, it settled down, and I lay down and I went to sleep. And I never had it again. And I think that
the body
was my...
Is... Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, 25 years... And it needed to offload that old bit, as you're saying, held in the membrane, in the cellular membrane. It's fascinating. Yeah.
What is the book that comes to mind? But I can't remember if that's. I mean, I got it for so many of my studies, but
Candice Pierce. Yes, Candice Pert. Yes.
Yeah.
Molecules of Emotion.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I probably have got it somewhere, but you know, when you just think, There's
Yeah.
something
Yeah.
lovely,
Yes,
obviously.
I must go back to
I'll
that one.
think about that. I know I learned a lot of this for Dr. DeMartini on his what's it called? They're just so expensive, his courses is just ridiculous. But he has fantastic knowledge of the body. Really
Yes.
fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
Yes. Right. Eczema, so that can flare up, yes, and I've a number of cases been a big flare up, and then it has settled down again, and then no more eczema. They come back for the refresher, and there's nothing, been nothing at all. Alcoholic. Malcolm Carruthers' answer to this question was, how would you proceed with the client who is an alcoholic? He would say, buy them a round of drinks and run. Very naughty. Okay.
Very normal.
Very
Bad
naughty.
advice, though.
But it is quite sound advice, actually. Yes. Right. What's the most important thing that they have to do?
Be dry for 3 months.
Excellent. That's all we need to know. Well done.
What was
As
this?
long, this is
I didn't get that.
the alcoholic. Be dry for 3 months before you start teaching them mortigenics. This is the
Oh, yeah.
alcoholic. Yeah. Children, ages.
No AT for children under 5 years of age.
Yep.
No hard exercise under 10.
Yeah.
And then it says in the book, not solar plexus under 10, but you say we can.
Yes, I think, I mean, I taught someone of 11 and I taught her the whole thing, actually. She was,
Yeah, she's over
yes.
10.
Sorry?
She's over 10.
Den. Yes. How stupid of me. What a stupid thing to say. But I was sort of standing back and wondering how much she needed or wanted or anything else. And so, yeah. And I've
Doesn't
taught her.
it also, pardon me, doesn't it comes down to how mature the child is as
Well,
well?
exactly. That's the thing. You get the feel for where they are and so on. But really, when we think that heaviness and warmth is the primary two exercises for bringing about the most change, not that it all happens at that time, but heavy and warm seem to be the main agents, then just to, excuse me, just to teach a child heavy and warm will be fine. And I don't think that again, it needs, it's about the maturity of the child, whether you give them the wording for the breathing. You could just give them nothing and just say, hey, just lie there quietly for a bit and just see what happens to your breathing, what that's like. So we can make it very simple.
A quick question. Do we learn how to do AT with children or not?
Well, we sort of, it's sort of covered. And
Okay.
I
So
think
it's
what
the
I'm,
same.
what, yes, I mean, it's honestly, AT doesn't change.
Okay.
The only difference is going to be the child and the age and what they can take on board. And some of them just need to learn to lie on the floor and notice what it feels like to lie on the floor because perhaps they have too much energy and they just don't stop. Very often, less is more. Might be all they need is lying on the floor. That's a bit simplistic, actually. The client recovering from a heart attack, we've done this before. It would be waiting a bit of time, so recovery has taken place.
Was it
About
not the
3 months,
midwife that
you
came
think?
up with the post-op, waiting till they'd had their post-op?
And we'd had, yes, I mean, a heart attack might not mean that they've had to have
Right,
surgery,
but like their
but yes, I
follow-up.
mean, I think the 3 month thing goes for either, probably. Yeah. And athletes, I don't know if you've found this, it might be buried away somewhere. There's a theory that athletes do not or should not use the forehead cool exercise, which I've never quite understood, to be fair, and I should go back to the books and find out why. There was some sort of research that might have been about their focus, but I would have thought forehead cool would help the focus. But there's something anatomically, biologically functional about this disturbing their performance? I'll have to dig out the answer for that one.
Yeah, I'd be quite interested.
Big question mark with that one because I couldn't figure that one out.
No, no. Okay, I will look that up. And where are we?
Number five.
Number five, can you think of any circumstances about referring somebody on for other professional help? I think that's a bit of an advanced question, really. Sorry, Beth.
No. I was going to say if it became apparent they needed talking therapy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Or if what they'd been able to mask was a serious psychological illness. But how much can you refer a person for that, unless you're concerned for their physical or mental well-being?
Well-being.
Yeah.
Well, actually, maybe that is the answer. When you are concerned about their physical and mental well-being, and
Yeah.
that, of course, with the dialogue with the patient, something might emerge where actually you both realize that they need a different intervention. And probably when they're simply not getting on with AT, if they're not practicing and they're not able to, and something's really in the way, then the answer might be, what about some counseling or some psychotherapy or even CBT, actually, to get a bit cognitive and then come back into the body later? But I think it would be something you might talk about with the client for them to follow up and seek if they're working privately. And you could, of course, write a letter with where they've got to with autogenics, but you won't find any other therapists very familiar with autogenics. So such a letter is quite tricky to put together. Take it to supervision and find out.
Also, I think it said in the notes that if it's somebody that is very anxious about their difficulties in breathing, to
Oh,
pass
that's interesting.
do note that with any lung pathology, oh God, better put this one on, causing breathing difficulties. There will always be a very high level of anxiety, and AT is likely to be very helpful. But in case there are any doubts or queries, it might be advisable to get in touch with a medical practitioner. I can't remember where I took that out
No,
of.
yeah, and that is good advice. I have to say, I have never ever come across it in all these many, many years. If
Right.
anything, breathing difficulties have settled down. And of course, that's for some medical help and not the psychological. So if you're concerned, then
Refer them.
talk to your supervisor, of course, or one of us or whatever, and the chances are they're actually going to work through it. And you could put them on a short stitch for a week or 2 weeks and say, let's see what happens and see if this passes. That kind of mode. What about you, Donna?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you're not sure, obviously talk to your supervisor, talk to the client
Yeah.
themselves. And going back to when you said not a lot of other professionals know about AT, actually in the society we've got quite a few other professionals
Journals. Yes, this
obviously
is
that
true.
know about AT, so
Yeah.
that might be your first stop to find somebody in the society that also teaches AT but does something else, and
Yes.
they would be on the same wavelength.
Yeah. That could be very nice. Yes. Okay. Oh, well, we've talked about groups today. Would you have
What's
any
the difference?
thoughts?
What's the difference between AT and hypnosis? Is B, isn't it? A and
Oh,
B.
sorry, I did. I beg your pardon.
I
Okay. Oh,
told
we did
you
that yesterday. That's quite convenient. Yes. I don't think we're going to add anything to that, are we?
No, I've got my note somewhere if you want me to read it out again, but
I can read you a sentence I wrote if that's helpful.
Yes.
Hypnosis is commonly used as a therapeutic tool in clinical settings, and it can be used for various purposes such as addressing phobias, treating trauma, managing pain, or exploring unconscious patterns. And it's typically performed by trained professionals, such as hypnotherapists or psychologists.
Okay. And the big difference.
Yeah.
Is that...
Yeah.
Or that AT is self-generated, where hypnosis is from an outside person.
That's the biggest difference. Yes. The key thing. Yes. Yes. I think if I was having hypnosis, I wouldn't have encountered my curious experience of the ache in the back and the breathing thing. No way.
Only if you were guided and directed there.
Yes.
But they wouldn't have known to do that.
And they wouldn't have known to do that. I wouldn't have known to ask for it.
No.
And if they had said, this is what we're going to do, I might have been mildly interested, but there would have been some resistance. There would have been something in there that says, oh, come on, that can't be, you know, what on earth are we doing? Mm-hmm. Who knows? Don't know. So teaching AT to individuals and groups, we've sort of covered. Have you got a kind of leaning towards one or the other, and why?
I love groups and I love one-on-ones. And I think sometimes a group is not good for a certain person. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just in the work that I do now. Mm-hmm. And I would think that would be the same with AT. You say individual. You know, I love groups, though. I really do love them.
And when I used to run groups in my private practice, I don't anymore. It seems impossible logistically. You can never get enough people together available at the same time to run the group. But at the hospital, we do manage it. But of course, I would offer the group sessions cheaper than individual because you're not getting as much attention. But also, I do think that when people are afraid or wary of coming to a group, it's surprising how quickly they're ease into it and they like the style of our groups because they're not group psychotherapy.
Then how long is a group session for? Is that 2 hours?
One and a half? It's 2 hours at the hospital, yes.
And that's a good time?
Well, it depends how talkative they are and it depends on which week you are and how much there is to cover. Mm. But 2 hours... Yeah, do you fill all that time, Donna?
Yeah, mainly. Yeah, sometimes not quite 2 hours if it's a smaller group and we're on a quick week, you know, not as much to cover. Then maybe it's an hour and a half.
Exactly.
Do you have a run sheet for your timetable or not really?
A run sheet.
A run sheet?
Meaning... I don't know what that expression means.
As in you run the exercise, you introduce this, you do, like, how we run it, do you mean?
Like 10 minutes, if you have 10 minutes on this, then, and you have 15 minutes on that, it's just like...
A course outline, an outline of the session with timings.
Yeah. Yeah. Not with timings. I mean, I know what order I'm going to do it in because it's the same all the time, but I don't time it, actually. Maybe
neither
I should.
Do I.
I don't.
No, and I think it's quite difficult to do that. It's interesting, isn't it? It has never occurred to me. It's just in doing the work, I do know that I must be halfway through the 2 hours. After 1 hour, we must be looking at the new exercise.
Yeah.
Especially if we're also going to be doing an offloading exercise, and we've got sort of 4 weeks with offloading exercises in them.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I think that's how I kind of gauge mine. It's like we need to get the last week's done.
Yeah, have the feedback.
We've got an hour.
Why you have it up here?
Mm.
Well, I do want to sit in front of the clock. I make sure that my chair is where I can see the clock and keep an eye on the time. And, of course, I've got my watch and we've all got phones and things. So, yes. And you get a sense when someone is talking for too long, but actually we're going to run over if we're not careful. So you might have to say, we are taking a bit longer over these things today. It doesn't mean I want to hurry anybody up, but we must move on. So you sort of occasionally have to say something like that. But you would be familiar with that. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you've got 10 people, then it takes quite a long time to have the feedback. And
Mm.
last week it so happened that I just picked on the person sitting next to me and said, "Would you like to start us off?" And she was so hesitant, and she'd written loads of notes, and she'd obviously done her practice and done everything beautifully. But she said, "What do you want to know?" And I said, "Well, I don't know what you've got to tell me." So, so we had a bit of a laugh about that. And she took a long time to get going and so on. And it was such a shame because she'd heard other people do feedback the previous week. Anyway, so it did take time, but everybody else hurried up a little bit after that. It was funny, that actually. And some people don't want to say very much, and you've got to question them a bit more just to get, wait a minute, wait, did you do 3 times a day or how was it? And so on. But you get the feel for it.
Yeah, I meant to bring that up with Anne actually when we were talking about the groups, because she was saying if somebody does take a long time, then you make sure to give the next person the same amount of time. But I find that very difficult if I've had somebody that's, oh, well, I had this and then I had breakfast and it goes on forever. And you kind of hurry them up and get what you need, then you move on. And you've got somebody like, oh yeah, it was fine.
Yes.
But what do you mean by fine? And they're so reluctant. Oh yeah, I did it. You know, I only did it a
Yes.
couple of times a day, but yeah, it was
Yes.
okay. And they're finished. How do you make sure they still get the same amount of
I
time?
don't.
Because sometimes, no matter how many probing questions, there's only so
Yes.
many you can ask and get. No, it's
Absolutely.
lovely. Oh, it's fine. Oh yeah, that was.
Yes. Yes.
You and then I feel like I'm interrogating them, and they're not liking it. So I do move on, but I haven't given them the same amount of
Yeah,
time
equal
as the
time.
previous person.
No.
I mean, I do say, are we okay to move on? And they
Yeah.
say yes.
Yeah.
But now Anne was making me think, should I stay with them more so they get the same slice of cake as she was talking about?
No, I don't think so.
I'm
I think it's their choice that they're not
Yeah.
saying very much. And if you are saying, so you're telling me it's lovely. So what was lovely? What was going on that felt lovely? And if they still can't tell you, then there's nothing more that you can do. And what you could do is actually say, do you know what? Our autogenic groups were supposed to give the same time to each person. So that we've got a sort of fair balance going on around the room, and at the moment I haven't achieved it with you, Donna, shall I say? And are you comfortable with that? We move on now, and so you can actually say what we're aiming for. Why
Yeah, I
not?
think it's a good idea. Yeah.
That's what I do with my groups. I always, when I set them up and set the guidelines in the beginning, and I always do it with a bit of humor
Yes.
to
Yes.
I said, you know, something like, is it okay we cry in the
Yes.
group? And I say, is it okay we cry snot?
Yes.
And then ha 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 ha, and it just loosen it all up.
Yes,
And I say,
yes.
listen, what we do as well is we're going to share. And we are on a time limit here. And to make it fair for everyone here, would it be okay with you that we just do it for 3 minutes? And just be mindful if you run over, you're actually taking the time for the next
Decided
person.
person.
I'm
That's
just
lovely.
saying,
That's
set it up like
yeah.
they're more mindful.
Yes.
And it always works out.
Yes. It is
Always.
funny how it works out. It is funny
Yes.
how it works out. You're quite right.
Yeah.
Yes, I like that actually at the beginning because of course we've got it slightly differently. We've got introductions in week one, and actually we don't share very much. We don't share. I'm always very careful to say, we don't, this is not the place to give your medical histories in detail. This is not the place to be discussing all your problems at home. What we are doing is we're a class and we're learning autogenic training. We're going to do that all together. And we will have the go rounds to say what you've noticed during exercises. But we're not really sharing all that much. You're sharing your experience with autogenics, but that's all. So, but hey, when did I ever say it just like I've just said it? No, it's going to be different every time, isn't it?
Yeah, and
So,
it is different every time, isn't it? I'm learning that you do the same thing in a group. Every group morphs into its own entity.
It
And
does.
I because I was thinking about that the other day, that am I a different therapist? I can't be. I'm
No,
me.
yeah.
But one group seemed to want more of this, and another group want more, a bit more of that.
That,
And so
yes.
that's what you sort of give them. So
Yeah.
I was thinking about the refresher when they all come together. they might think, well, our session wasn't like that. And it wasn't, but it was still me doing the same thing. And it, yeah, it's weird because it does become its own entity.
Yeah, it does. But actually, the refreshers are quite fun because they do come together and it's a new experience. And at first, they might be a bit, oops, I don't know if I like this. But by the end, people very often say, it's been really nice actually to meet some different people at the same stage as us. So,
No, I'm sure it will be. But I was just thinking that just take one person out and put them in a different group of mine, and they might think, well, this is completely different. But yeah, that's just what goes through
that's
my
how
head.
It is, yes. Oh wow, you have done such a lot of hard work this week. That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you.
Really good.
And we would have had to have managed a bigger group, wouldn't we? If there had been more of you.
Yes. And not so much personal attention and guidance, you know, so for that I'm very grateful. You know, we may lose out on the insights from other people's perspectives, but I'm taking all the wins.
Yeah, take all the wins. You haven't really got much choice anyway, have you? So that's the way of it. Yes.
We get more access to you and Anne and Donna, you know, and anyone else who comes in future.
Okay. Right. So we're winding up now. Is that right? Yes.
Not doing feedback? Big feedback forms?
I did. Oh, Biddle, I couldn't get them done. I'll send them to you.
Oh, wonderful. That would be great. Yeah, I'll be very keen to see what you do and use.
Well, they're kind of made up a bit. I mean, but they are, well, of course they're made up according to our course. And so simple, simple.
Wonderful.
We used to ask for quite a lot of comment, and then people weren't putting comment. They were just ticking. So we stopped.
I remembered something. Do you remember I sent an email about the MyMop?
Yes.
It might be something to discuss this weekend. It's now
a
good Jane.
I can't remember exactly what you said. What I will say is that we use MyMops at the hospital, and there have been studies, I say studies done, but the results have been collated, and I'm hoping to get Nick Straton to talk about audit and so on. So what was your question?
So during supervision, Patricia really helpfully suggested that I get back in touch with Meaningful Measures to see if they'd give a free license, because I'm a student and the BAS has charitable status. And I did that. I sent them a message and I got a call from a lady called Helen Sears, I think her name is. And she said, yes, for students generally, we will give a free license for the paper version with other supplementary information that helps you to analyse it. And she said she'd get the administrator to do that. Now, in the meantime, she also sent an email that I forwarded to you. And in there, she said, you know, they are giving these free licences on a discretionary basis, because obviously they don't want to be overrun. They're trying to manage the numbers. And because I think for the paper license, it's not very much money per year anyway, but they appreciate that as students, we're not really earning money. So they want to encourage us to work with the tools so that we understand them. And they have two tools now. You've got the MyMop, which is more about medical symptoms. And then they have something called a MyCow, which is measure your measure yourself concerns and well-being, which felt for me more suited to what we do in autogenic training, because we're not asking them how we can help them with their medical symptoms. We're asking them, you know, basically how they're feeling and at the beginning and the end of the course for them to see what's changed and see their own journey and their own progress. So that's the tool that I use with my client. And I will do one at the end, and I think I need to feed back something to Meaningful Measures, who manage the licenses. But I wanted to share that with you because I wanted to tell Pia and Sebastian about this facility that I have, whilst also saying that the licenses are being given on a discretionary basis. And Helen also said, you know, that if the BAS want to get involved, they can have like a license that then enables all the students to go on and have electronic access. So you can give us logins. And I said, well, obviously that's not for me to get involved in. I'm going to pass that information on to Jane and Donna. And if you wanted to do that, then I'll leave that up with you. Obviously it's not, you know, at the moment you're not training a massive number of students, are you? So I don't know what the benefit would be of that. So yes.
That's it. That's really interesting. And thank you. I don't, well, we'll have to talk about it and see. I will find your emails. I can't, and my brain just won't work at the moment to even consider what might be involved or what we've got to do.
And Pia, do you want me to send you a link to Meaningful Measures so you can look at the two licenses?
Yeah, that would be great. And yeah. I'm not sure because I know that my insurance is covering autogenics here in Australia, so I'm really happy about
that.
Oh,
good.
I found out a couple of weeks ago, so that's really good. But I'm not sure if I have to use some other measure of the Australian standard of whatever it's called. So, but I would love to, Bev, if you could.
That'd yeah, and certainly this is not something we need for well, I don't think I need this for any insurance purposes. It's just a measurement tool. And it's quite advanced. I think the doctors who have set it up, it's, you know, they've been doing this for years, and it's like all outcome based and what have you. And I think initially I just want to use a form and see what happens in the process. Yeah, happy to send the link to you and Sebastian. And, you know, get in touch with them if it's something that you're interested in. With them, fingers crossed, you might get a free paper license if you want one. Yeah,
that's great. Do you use the life questionnaire? Do you use that, Beth, as well?
I did both of them. I thought, you know what? I'm learning. Let's just, you know, if my client's up for it, and I always give it as an option. So, you know, if you would like to do these, there's two. Please fill them in. And she was very, very willing to do them and sent them back to me. So apart from the pre-course questionnaire, because that's private for her. Sorry, that one.
Yes, that one, the self-assessment.
Yeah, she's kept that for herself.
Yeah. I mean, I use the HADs, which apparently cost £1 each. So, but we've all got photocopies of them, and so I use it, but I don't publish, so they don't know that I've done anything with it. But it's very useful for the client to see what their scores were before.
The one page?
Is that it's just the one page with lots of boxes on it.
Yeah, so how do you actually measure it?
Let's have a session on it. Oh, you want to know now?
It doesn't have to be now.
I tell you what, I mean, I have got another sheet with scores on. So
oh, you do?
I can send you that.
That would be fantastic.
And the drawback is that unless we pay an awful lot of money with everybody using these, we can't actually publish those results. Okay.
We can keep them for ourselves, can't we?
We can keep them private. Right.
And Beth, did you sort out a format so the format of it doesn't skew? Did you do a make one form?
Yeah, so there's two things. Well, there's probably a lot of things I want to say about this. So I've updated it in Word so that you could send it to a client. They can fill it in. The downside of that is twofold. One, if it's in a Word document, it means they can change it. So it's not PDF. Secondly, my client was printing from her iPhone and it lost all the formatting. So it was, you know, I ended up having a paper copy that looked nothing like what this beauty that I produced. And then she filled one in online and sent it as a WeTransfer file, which I could read. And then I had to amalgamate the two because she'd filled them in at different times. So they were slightly different, ever so slightly. I just wanted to make sure she said more on one. So I think, yeah, I'm happy to share it with you. And but the other thing I've noticed as I've gone through the assessment is I think, and I didn't want to do this without getting permission, so I'm glad you've mentioned this, I want to add a couple of things and change a couple of things on it. How much freedom do we have to do that?
I think certainly talk about it with your supervisor, yeah, or with one of us.
Yeah.
And I mean, I put a whole page in. I put the gynecology page in the childbirth because nobody. I had so many stressful stories, yeah, of childbirth. And then there was nothing on there to record that, and it was silly. So that was something I did on my own for my own use, and then it was adopted by the society. So I think there is reason, personally, for having all those questions. So, yeah. But if you've got questions about that and you want to change, then yes, of course, let's have that. Let's have that dialogue.
You know, for example, insulin isn't on there as a medication.
No, well, if you want to put it on there, that's fine. So there is other. So they can write it in.
Yeah. You know, but I just thought it might be useful that I just noticed a few things that weren't automatically on there. And I thought, I wonder if we can change it. So, yeah wonderful.
Yes.
Not that I'm looking in any way to rewrite it because it's a very thorough and in-depth assessment form. Yeah. So I'm happy to share it with you in its current state. I'll send that out and then do what you want with it. Save it as a PDF. But the purpose of it was so when you've got the spaces with the lines, you can type in it and the lines don't move. And off the page.
That's the really difficult. But can you type into a PDF, though?
No, you can't.
No, exactly. So it, I've had awful trouble with this, and some people are absolutely brilliant at managing their questionnaires. You know, I send it in a Word version, and it comes back beautiful. And another one, the mess that you've described, has been absolutely impossible. And so I would rather post it to them in that situation. Of course, if you're working worldwide, that isn't practical. But I, in the UK, I would rather post it, have them write on it and then post it back. And I would even, in order to have that, put in a stamped addressed envelope so that they can.
Yeah.
Because that's how I always used to work. Excuse me. What did happen was that they used to arrive bringing it with them. But now everything's on Zoom. So that's been the difficulty. Thank you for that. I've really got to go, actually. I've got
Thank you, Donna. Nice to see you, Pia. Thank you too.
Thank you both. And we will keep in touch with Sebastian and see how things are going. But I think just leave him be for now.
Yeah. And is there anything we need to do for next time? Anything we need to have for homework or?
Well, yes, you will be working on a presentation, maybe 5 or 10 minutes presentation. No, that's in November. I can't remember. You can start to work on it. You can start to work on an essay. You can do all sorts of things that are going on.
Prepare tutorial 5, read presentation skills assignment, which is an assessment pack, I think.
Yes.
It's what it says in the timetable.
Yeah.
Yes, you're not doing that until November. So for next time, we're going to talk about measuring tools next time in September. So the HADS is in there.
Yeah, on Sunday.
Okay. Do you need that beforehand? I'll send it anyway, the HADS.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you. No, I don't think there's anything yelling at me out of the timetable as we have it.
Thank you very much.
If something develops, then we will let you know.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. It's been a fabulous weekend. Thank you.
Well, there are two people who've made it so, and that's you two.
Yeah.
And this sort of free for all, as Donna says, our course sort of morphs into something, and we suppose it's training.
Yeah. I
Oh.
learned a lot, so thank you. Thank
So,
you very
and don't forget, we are here. If you've got any questions that are cropping up that you can't get answered, then please get in touch. Okay. Meanwhile,
Thank
all the
you.
best.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. Are we
Whew.
okay? Are you all right?
I'm exhausted.
I bet. It's been a weekend.
It
It has been a
absolutely,
weekend.
it has, but very, very illuminating and relevant. Yes. Are you all right?
Yes, I'm ready to put my feet up. But do you know what? I've had a puppy since 2 o'clock.
Yes.
She's been an absolute little angel. Absolute angel. Touch.
I wonder, is there something about only one person being there? Because
I do. Yeah.
I
Do
know
you?
my sister used to talk a lot about dogs and say that actually when there were a lot of people, the dog always wanted to round them up and have them all in the same place.
She does, yeah, she can be a bit like that. But I
Yeah.
think also Jade can be a bit spiky. We've definitely got two different energies. And our house, when I'm in it on my own, is my friends say, oh, I love your house. But if Jade's been in it, it's a totally different atmosphere. Just because she's 25 and she's all over the place. But if she just goes and leaves me, it's such a chilled out, calm environment, apparently. That yeah, I think, and whenever Jade goes out, she's just like, oh, are you gone? All right then. Flop. Because I just text her, just like we were having, I don't know, when I got up to let her out, she was wandering about. I just text Jade to say she's just woken up. She's like, really? She's been asleep? Yeah, since you went, she's been asleep and I've just let her out in the garden and she's not barking. She's just having a pad around the garden. I'll go and play football with her now because she's been so good.
Yeah, she has. Isn't that lovely? That is brilliant.
But I won't tell
Well,
Jade any of that because she'll get really snarky about it all.
I'm going out to dinner now with my
Oh.
daughter and my grandson and his girlfriend. So
Oh, lovely.
that'll be a real change. Mind you, I've done enough talking. Thank you very much. So we'll see what
Be an owl.
happens.
Be an owl for the evening and sit on an oak. No, sit on a chair, but be an owl for an evening.
There was an old owl who sat on an oak. The more he heard, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why not be like that wise old bird? I've written that down now.
Yeah, I scribbled it somewhere.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell Jade yesterday. Said, oh, it's this lovely poem, Oak, Bird, Rock,
Heard,
but
yes.
spoke, talk.
Heard, yes.
I'm like, no, forget it. She's like, Mum, why don't you ask her again and then tell me the poem? That was more
Lovely.
fun my way.
Oh, go and have a lovely game of football with that little dog.
I will
Okay.
do.
Yes.
And you have a lovely evening.
Okay. Thank you. It won't be a long evening. I think everybody's going to be tired, probably. So I'm going shortly, actually. I must tell my daughter, yes, please, I'd like a lift. Okay. Lots of love.
Yes, I'll see
We'll catch up at some point, but
We
not
must.
right
Yeah,
now.
no, we'll sort that out during the week.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, we've got the meeting tomorrow with Stephen and Nick.
Oh,
But
we have. Yes.
at 10 o'clock, I haven't set it up yet.
No, I must ring because my mum had that incident
Oh, yes.
on Thursday. Then I was out all Friday. Well, no, sorry, she had it on Friday, didn't she? On my way in. It was the last Thursday. I have to ring the doctors in the morning. If they can fit her in, I might have to take her straight down there.
Yes,
So
that's very
if
nice.
I don't, I'll be here.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll send it to you
If I'm
anyway.
not, I'm
Yeah.
sorry that I've got
No,
to, I'm
that's all
going to have to
right.
get that sorted though.
Yeah.
Because when Anne mentioned it today with angina, we can either do something or wait for the heart attack. I'm like, no, I'm trying to. That's where I am. So if I've got a chance to get her in for a test or something,
Yeah.
I need to do that.
Yes, it needs to happen, doesn't it, for everybody's sake? And then you all know where
Yeah,
you are. Yes.
absolutely.
No,
So,
I quite
yeah.
understand that. Okay. Right. Well, I will set that up and include you, and we'll see what happens.
Yes, I'll
Okay.
text you. I'll let you know if I'm off to the doctor's, or yes, I'll be there just so you know.
Okay. That's lovely. Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay.
All right. We will say goodbye and thank you so much. It's been brilliant. It's been,
Yes, it has
you've
been.
done really lovely, lovely stuff. Okay. I'm clicking leave. So, and that's leave and leave meeting. Bye.
Okay.